cool. Alex and Nick.
Hey.
I'm Alex.
I'm Eric.
And we're Two Scoop Games, and we're from Louisville, like you said. And we're with Game Dev Lou, is our local like meetup and gathering. We're hanging out with other game developers and stuff. And we're trying to kind of emulate some of the cool stuff that you guys are doing here with Jeff Dev, because you've got a couple years on us, so we're trying to catch up. But we do a lot of game jams and stuff too, so we're going to be excited to do it there soon. So, yeah, so our talk is about creating games with HTML5. So we're just going to kind of go slide by slide and talk about our experiences and some of the technology that we use and some of the advantages to using HTML5, some of the difficulties that we've had. And at any time, if anybody has any questions or comments or anything, just feel free to shout it out. We're not, it's not like a real formal kind of thing. So just we can have a conversation going. So you can talk about this, your first try to make an HTML5 game.
Yeah, I was, this was over last Thanksgiving. I was at home. My brother's going to college for computer science right now, and he was frustrated with what he was learning in school. He was only learning, like, business app type stuff, and he was not understanding a lot of things, and It was because he wasn't having anything fun to do, so I wanted to teach him a little bit of video game programming. And the easiest way I could think to do that was to just open up a web browser and start typing in JavaScript, because there's like no barrier to entry. I didn't have to set up any tools on his machine or anything. And I was doing some quick Googling and figured out just how easy it was to do a simple game with Canvas in a web browser. And I made this in several hours. It's basically like Cannonball, like just run forever. Yeah. And it's all just rectangles.
And it's procedurally generated, so that's it even has buzzwords.
Yeah.
So yeah, so Eric was working on that, and we were going to some of the same meetups like Chaos and JS Lou, which is the meetup that I run, and I noticed that he was working on this, and I thought it was pretty cool, and I've been working on some game projects, and so I thought, hey, it would be really nice to have someone else to work on these with, I offered to do some artwork for the game, and then we started working on our first game, which was Scurry, which we'll get to a little bit later. So,
Scurry.
So why would we pick, or why would you write a game in HTML5? One of the things is that it's just such a low barrier to entry. Like, you can run it on just about any device nowadays. Every phone, every tablet, every computer, like anything with a modern web browser, you know, not i6, but anything modern or recent in the last couple of years, you can basically get it working. And you can do something on, like, there's a site, CodePen, where you can just, it's just like an online JavaScript editor, and you can start typing stuff in there, and in, you know, a couple of minutes, you can have rectangles and stuff drawing without installing any tools, just going to a web page.
Kind of like a JS Fiddle kind of thing, so if you're familiar with that.
Yeah. And JavaScript is a fun, easy, lightweight language to mess around with. Like, there's, you can basically do whatever you want. And if you're a web dev, you've already got a lot of JavaScript skills, and you just learn a couple of new APIs, and you can go right into it without a big learning investment. And it works on everything.
Yeah, so like it says, there's no barrier to entry for players. So I mean, anybody can give them a link, and they can fire up your game and try it out. So this is the game that we ended up making with it. It's called Scurry. It's out of JS Roofrunner, added some artwork and went a little bit further with everything.
It's all still rectangles under the hood. So we started working on this. I met Alex, and we started doing all the art and making it look really awesome, and realizing that this was going to be a thing, and we're going to do multiple games now. So we started pulling apart the functionality from the game into an engine that I've been working on called Splat.js.
And so there's even docs and stuff for it now. So And it's a, it's also, I added on the slide here, it's a NPM module. So you can pull that down and add it to your projects.
So with, like, having an engine and, like, you can abstract across a lot of the differences. Even because you're in a web browser, not everything's the same across every device. Like, devices are not all the same screen size. They have different API support. But JavaScript is such a flexible language that you can patch over a lot of the differences and just make them all look the same without having to run... You could basically run the same code on all of them if you patch over all the differences. And that's one of the strengths of HTML5 and JavaScript. And if you like look at all the docs now, like on Mozilla Developer Network, they have like really excellent documentation on all the JavaScript APIs, and there's all this new fancy stuff. And if you look, you can do anything you'd ever want to do in a game. Like you got 2D graphics, you got 3D graphics with WebGL. You can do real simple audio with the HTML5 audio tag, but you can also do Web Audio API where you can mix channels and sequence stuff and do 3D position of the sound. You can do all your input, your keyboard, your touch. You can have up to 10 touches or whatever the device supports. There's a gamepad API. You can control the vibrator on the phone. You can do fonts. And you can. There's a WebRTC, which you can use as a data channel now, or you can use WebSockets and talk to a server and do any sort of networking. So you can do basically anything you'd want to do in a game. I don't know that you'd want to write like a AAA Doom or Quake or whatever.
They did the Unreal Engine.
They
rewrote the Unreal Engine.
What's their demo?
The
Epic
Capital,
Citadel.
Yeah,
demo.
Epic Citadel. That's a really interesting one.
They actually transpiled that from C++ into JavaScript and ran it on Firefox
browser
through ASM.js, which isn't something you'd probably be doing by hand. But
it takes a little bit to load, but it like runs perfectly smooth. It's pretty cool. And then you can use other stuff on the device, like a webcam, or you can use the camera on the device, or the microphones, stuff like that. And home screen icons on most of our, like Android and iOS devices, you can save a web page as an icon, and it looks just like an app. But then when it opens it up in a single tab browser without any Chrome around it, so that you could just play it as a kind of like a app. And with the data storage, you can actually, well, what's the thing that you use to run it offline?
App cache.
With app cache, you can run it completely offline too. So once they've played it one time, it's cached on their device and they never have to download it again. So they don't have to be connected to the internet at all. So it's like it's full apps just in browsers. So it's pretty cool.
Is it the location of the file?
There's the way that the local storage works is it has like a specific place that it saves it, right? And you're in the it like
no it's
saves.
The manifest is it's just a list of all of the files that your app uses. So it's just a list of URLs basically. All the pictures, all the sound files, all whatever. And then the browser just knows to save all of those for offline use. And then you can put your phone in airplane mode and it just still works like it's online.
Right. Have you guys tested the accelerometer?
Yeah, that's actually really cool. Maddie in our game dev group, she added full accelerometer support to the Splat engine. So it was like 4 or 5 lines of JavaScript. It was actually a lot simpler than you'd expect. And so you got the gamma, and like there's 3 axes.
There's the rotation on each
axis
and then the position on each axis.
Yeah, so it just spits out floating points and it just spins out floats and you can do whatever you want with those numbers. So you could tell it. She made a game where when you move you tilt your phone to the side, then it controls the character movement to the sides. So it's kind of cool. It works on some laptops. It works on tablets and desktops and tablets and phones, a couple laptops. So it's pretty cool.
Do you have any problems with the browser rotating orientation? Like if you move the phone too far or something? Does the browser
Yeah, we haven't really played around with the accelerometer too much ourselves, so I don't.
It probably would rotate on you.
I think that there's a meta tag that you can do to lock rotation though.
There might be.
Yeah, because there's meta tags that you can put on the HTML page that will say like maximum zoom is 1.0 and minimum zoom is 1.0, and then it'll like not let you zoom. And I think you could do one for rotation too. like device orientation, I think it's called, or something like that.
There's a lot of like de facto standards that Apple came up with for iOS back before they wanted people writing native apps, when they said it was just going to be a web app thing, and with the first iPhone, they came up with all these weird tags that you could put in there to control a web page and make it feel like an app. There's just a lot of Google and that kind of stuff. And now everyone has kind of implemented that, like that's in Chrome. And
all the WebKit stuff.
They carry over. Basically work everywhere, even though they're not an official standard.
So, then, getting players. So, this is, I guess, our next challenge that we had was you know, getting the games out there. And so once we had already worked on Scurry for a little while, but we got kind of bored with that after a while, and we started to do some other stuff. We did a game jam. We did the global game jam and made a game for that. And then we did the Flappy Jam, and we did a game called Kickbot for that. And we put our games out there on lots of different kind of different sites and different places. We put it on Itch.io for the Flappy Jam. We did the Global Game Jam site had our game for that, and you know, people started playing them and making like review videos and stuff, and it was pretty cool to see that kind of stuff. And it was all just anybody could fire it up in their browser and record a video and play it, and you don't have to have any specific device or anything. So the next challenge was app stores, because we'd like to have our games out there for as many people to play as possible, and a lot of people are used to apps. And so one of the challenges was we're doing games that you play in a browser, and a lot of people weren't used to, you know, opening up a browser and going to a URL or following a link and playing a game in a browser tab on their phone. And so a lot of people would say, you know, when I would show them the game, they would say, okay, let me know when it's in the App Store and I'll download it. And it's like, well, you could just play it right now in your browser, but they didn't really understand that concept, because it's kind of different. Like, you think of that when you're doing like a Flash game or something like that, like people think of browser games a little differently than they think of like full, like they don't think of them as like real games yet. And so there's a lot of just, it's kind of a weird disconnect there.
Yeah, it's a weird mental thing, and you have to put it in the App Store, because no one's going to Google for a game and play it on their phone on a website. People just go to the App Store and look for games. So that's where you have to be. And luckily we found something, like you can get in the Chrome Web Store, that's easy. You add one little file, it takes about 15 minutes, and you can get in the Chrome Web Store. But the iOS store is a little bit harder. We ended up finding something called Ejecta. That's an open source project by a guy who made another JavaScript game engine called Impact.js. And he wrote this thing that emulates the canvas tag in an HTML web page. And he basically embedded a whole JavaScript interpreter into an iOS app and took all of the browser APIs and re-implemented those in like iOS land, talking to like OpenGL on the phone. And then you can basically paste all of your JavaScript and your assets into this folder and hit build in Xcode, and it will produce an iOS app. In a lot of cases, it actually runs better than in the browser, because it's just going straight to OpenGL. Like with Canvas, you have two different drawing contexts. You can draw with the normal Canvas stuff, which is just 2D rectangles and images and stuff. And then there's WebGL, which is 3D or 2D, but it's usually hardware accelerated. Whereas the regular Canvas stuff isn't always hardware accelerated, or it's not as accelerated as much. So with Ejecta, like all the stuff that we've done is just the regular Canvas. But when you're using Ejecta, it's kind of like a cheat to like, it translates it to OpenGL for you, which would be like probably the same speed gain you'd get by using WebGL. So it performs really well.
So like, for example, I'm opening this up in a browser, and this is our game Kickbot, and I can hit play now, and it's just opening up in Chrome, in the Chrome browser. So I'm on Wi-Fi, so I have to wait for it to download the game. So I'll try one that I've already downloaded. This.
Is this still in the middle?
That's a Firefox.
Oh, that's
Firefox right. Marketplace.
Oh,
yeah. So.
Me neither.
It's kind of new. So here is Suresh, which is our new game, and this is playing it in the browser. So this is just a regular web page, and you're playing it in Chrome. You know, and it acts like a full game. And then if I open up the app that we packaged with Ejecta. It's the same thing. So I mean, people could play these games in the browser, but just the way that the marketplaces are right now, it's like it's hard to get games out there unless they're in some sort of app store. People aren't used to it, so yeah, it looks pretty much exactly the same. So
is it performing better on the browser than on the device itself?
Is it what?
Is it performance? I mean, does it seem to be
the performance in the browser is okay, but there's some like weird things, like if you have a lot of tabs open, it can, like if somebody had a ton of tabs open and they open up your game, it could slow the game down a little bit. And so you kind of don't want that, because then people are going to judge your game based on like their experience with it, so they're going to think that your game's slow. Or they're, you know, or they might have an old version of the browser. Like if you have the Android browser, the default Android browser, not Chrome, on your Android phone, like our stuff won't even run correctly because it's a really old version of Chrome. And then, if when you have an app, especially on iOS, it gives apps like first class everything. It's like diverts everything to that app. So it's like the only thing that it has open pretty much. It like backgrounds everything and all the memory, everything goes to that app. And it's, you can't accidentally swipe to another tab or hit the back button or anything weird while you're playing it in the app version. So that's automatically a little better. And then the other thing is, it's a little bit faster, the packaged app, because it's using using OpenGL instead of using the browser, whatever the browser's implementation is. So it is faster. You get like 60 frames per second pretty much all the time. So it's nice. So like when we were doing a bunch of particle effects and stuff with our new game, it's like you'll see them kind of come down in the browser, but then on the phone and on the tablet, it's just like they're just like super fast. So you might have to end up slowing some of that stuff down.
Also, it varies a lot across which devices you're testing on, like your desktop versus like an Android phone versus like a high-end Android phone and a low-end, and versus different iOS devices.
Like your Nexus 5 is like way faster than that phone. So.
Yeah, it all depends on every single device. So that's one of the tricks. It's trying to make it work and test it on all the devices.
So the other challenge that we've come across is that there's no... Did you talk about Android yet? There's no Ejecta type packaging thing for Android. So the guy that made it, he put out Impact, which is a JavaScript game engine. And then he made Ejecta, but it's only for iOS. And so there's not a way for us to get the things onto the Google Play Store.
Well,
so,
there might be a way. We just don't know. We haven't actually gotten it to work. There's some people who've made an open source clone of the iOS thing for Android called Ejecta. That's supposed to work on Android, and we've spent a bunch of time trying to make it work and mostly hated ourselves for it. But it should theoretically work. Like, it's under active development. I just think it's not as far along as the iOS version of it.
Yeah.
And it might just be a documentation problem. You know?
Yeah. But there's going to be a way. We'll figure it out soon. And then... Yeah, that's a really great... That's where we should have started this whole slide. When we first... The first thing that we tried was PhoneGap. We tried the Cordova PhoneGap, and we tried Cocoon.js. So PhoneGap, the first time that we tried it, it worked. We could get the game into... It's basically just takes a web page and makes it into an app. And so we could get it running and everything. But what the operating systems do is they use a different version of the JavaScript engine for if you're doing a web view, which is a web page view inside of an app, than they do for the actual browser, and so it wasn't hardware accelerated.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was the JavaScript or the just the rendering portion of it,
yeah.
but something wasn't hardware accelerated. And I
yeah.
actually found the bug on the Android open source project for that and found something in reference to that on iOS. And it's actually something they're working on in a future version of the OS. So we're waiting for a whole OS revision, but
yeah.
at some point, if PhoneGap will be accelerated out of the box and it should be fine. We wouldn't even need to do any of this other stuff.
So I think iOS 8 is coming out soon, and that'll fix that. But you can't expect everybody to have the latest version on of the operating system on their phone, so you have to try to make something that works for like the last 4 or 5 versions, if you can. And so Ejector works for that.
The nice
so.
Thing about PhoneGap, though, is that I don't think we had to do almost any modifications at all
yeah.
to our code to make it work. We pasted it in there, and it just worked right off the bat. With Ejector, we had to do a couple of patches on certain things. Like, since Ejector is just the JavaScript portion, there's no HTML or CSS. They have special calls for loading fonts and images and stuff
yeah.
like that. So we had to sort
of
smooth over that. And it was a little bit of work, not a lot of work, but PhoneGap was like no work. But it didn't work.
It wasn't as fast paced. It was turn based
yeah.
or a game or something.
If you're okay with like, we're getting like 15 frames per second, and so if you're okay with that, then you could do it. You know, if it's a web page or a web app, PhoneGap is awesome. It'll work just fine. You know, but if you need like, I don't know, it just didn't work.
Animations
for any of our
stuff. Are going to be stuttery and choppy.
Yeah.
Even like simple ones.
So. And then we tried another thing that was called Cocoon.js, and that's a web service where you send a zip file with your app into a black hole, and then you wait a little while, and then they send you back a magic package of your app, and it's supposed to work. And that just came up with a black screen for us, so I don't know if there was like something wrong or something, but it was hard to debug because. To debug this stuff rejected, we had to like look at the console and see what the errors were and try to figure that out. And with Cocoon, you're sending it away to something that's closed source, and you're not able to run it yourself on your own computer. And you know if you build your video game business on that, then what if they disappear someday? Then you don't even know if you're going to be able to make your apps anymore. So we wanted to try to base everything off of open source stuff so that we could eventually have the game engine, and then the game engine's already out there for everybody, but we could use the game engine for all of our games, and then every single time we make a game, just kind of eventually come up with a way to script something where you hit a button and it converts it to all the formats, and then you just have all these apps. So that's the end goal for Splat, so that'll be cool. It'll be a lot of work, but we're getting there.
We'll still have a good time. We've got iOS basically repeatable. It takes us about 5 minutes to do an iOS build of one of our games.
The Chrome Web Store is super easy.
Yeah, that's basically a blob of JSON that you put into a text file and you're done in a few minutes.
And the Mozilla one is supposed to be just as simple. We just haven't taken the time to do it yet. It's just another manifest, and you put it out on their store. And it'd be cool to get on there because they don't have that many apps right now, so you would be, you know, probably featured somewhere if you made a cool game. So.
How was it Windows? Is
that we haven't tried it yet. we need to get around to doing it. But, they're supposedly, I mean, most of the Windows 8 apps are done with, like, web technologies, like JavaScript, like the whole new mail client thing that they have, Windows Mail or whatever it's called, I think it was written with JavaScript, so it's supposed to be pretty easy to use that kind of stuff, so we'll see how it works. I keep trying to, like, put out things on Twitter, try to get Microsoft to send me some devices or something, that'd be sweet. I don't know, because we don't have them. That's the other challenge, is if you're, like, trying to test for different devices, you have to have them, or you have to, like, every time that we see somebody with a Windows phone, we're like, hey, can we try our game on that real quick, and we'll try to figure out what's wrong with it and see, because we don't have all these devices, so. Yeah, we basically just talked about all of that stuff. So the debugging across devices.
Some of the special difficulties with debugging across multiple devices is, you know, on your personal computer or whatever, you hit F12 and you've got your dev tools there in your web browser. You can see everything that's going wrong. You have a debugger, and you can see any errors on the console, and you can manipulate it right there. But when you are running it on a phone, how do you do that? And it turns out, you have to learn all of these things for each platform. And Android is, I think, pretty easy, where you can plug it in. If you're running the game in Chrome, you can plug it in, and your Chrome on your desktop will know that there's a Chrome on a phone plugged in through USB. and then you can use all the same dev tools on the phone through the computer, which is amazing.
You can do the same thing with Safari if you have an iPhone too. So if you run anything in Safari, you can get the full like inspect element, see the whole JavaScript console, all that stuff. If you open up Safari, and you have to like turn on developer mode, and then you can see all that stuff too. So that's pretty easy. And then if you're doing it with iOS, you can with Ejecta. So you've got your whole game is working in the browser, and then you put it in Ejecta, you run it through Xcode and put it out on your phone or whatever, and you test it, and it's a black screen, and you don't know what's going on. If you have to have the phone or whatever plugged in to the computer to transfer the app to it, and it's got a console readout for Xcode, and it'll tell you what's going wrong right there, so you can kind of check through that. So learning to use the different console logs and stuff to try to pinpoint where something's going wrong. So, like, we just had weird problems, like the what was that one, where the 9 patch, where it was when iOS was building the app, it was scaling our images, and so transparent places were actually getting scaled, like, the image was getting scaled, so a transparent area that was a zero opacity was getting, like, a little bit of a blur on it, so it would be not zero opacity anymore, so our 9 patch, which is, like, a way to make an image, like, stretch out like a button or something, have like different parts around it and stretch out, it was showing up all weird, and we couldn't figure that out until we tracked that down.
A lot of the nice parts though are that you usually only have to deal with these problems once. Like you'll the first time you go to get it to work on a device, you spend a couple of hours debugging all the problems and learning how to use that device and how to debug on it, and you solve whatever silly things are wrong in your engine or your toolkit or your library or it's basically done. And if you keep using that from project to project, you don't ever have to do that again for the most part. Because after that, it's just, if it works in the web browser, it's going to work on everything after you've patched over all the differences, because it's just JavaScript. And if it fails in one, it'll fail in all the rest.
Yeah. So we have a saying, like, when we fix something like that, we're like, it's an investment. And so then next time, you never have to do it again. You just spend a couple hours and get it done. And then if you're doing all your games in the same engine or framework or whatever, then you've got it under control. And then the screen resolution thing is something that we've mostly fixed, but we've still got a couple of things that we have to figure out. And it mostly has to do with, like, Canvas will scale to whatever size you want it to, but there are different aspect ratios for different devices. So, like, the iPad is more like a 4:3 ratio, and then the phones are taller and skinnier. And so it's just different stuff that we have to kind of tweak the artwork or center things or something, make it fit better. So it's just stuff that you have to kind of play around with, and you don't know what's going to happen until you've tried it on lots of different screen sizes. So
transferred into any issues with high API devices?
Well, that's the thing that we still have to fix, because we're doing all of this stuff right now at the resolution for iPhone 5. And so when we are playing our games on the iPad, most people don't notice, but they're actually stretched. And so the aspect ratio is good, and everything is like the right shape, but it's slightly, like if you get really close, you can see it's a little bit pixelated. And so we're going to fix that soon, kind of come up with like high-res artwork, and then use... maybe come up with someone to switch between the two or something.
Ejecta has something built in where it has, where it can automatically load the 2x textures or whatever, if you name them right and put them in the right folder or whatever.
That's cool.
So I don't know a whole lot about that, but I know that's an option. It should be pretty easy. Just have to make him redraw the art or something. Or re-export it from SVG or whatever. At a higher resolution.
So... you can talk about the audio thing. We talked about the other stuff really. The mobile browser, Chrome, just has to do with like when you're playing a game in a browser, sometimes you'll be able to scroll down and get rid of the URL bar. Sometimes you can't in certain browsers. So you've got this bar at the top and it's just always there. And if somebody accidentally clicks on that, it kind of takes them out of the game. Or Chrome on iOS has a gesture where if you swipe side to side, it changes tabs. So if you change tabs right in the middle of the game, that's really bad. So It's there's just some like browser Chrome things that are a little weird if you're doing playing it in the browser, and then the audio thing.
Yeah, you bump into some things that were made, that were put in like web browsers to like prevent like spamming and stuff when you're doing it, and one of those things is audio. So I think Safari might have started this, and then other browsers caught on and emulated this, where you can't play audio in a web browser until someone clicks or pushes a key at the web page. So you can't just, like, that's why all of our games are silent until you hit the press the start button,
yeah.
And that's when the music starts. And one of the weird, tricky things in is it has to be, you have to start playing the very first sound inside of the button click handler, like right inside of the button click handler, or the key down or whatever. And like usually with games, you'll have like an array of, you'll just sort of track all the buttons, whether they're up or down, so you can ask in the middle of the frame, is this button up or down, and not wait on events. Unless you're doing like an event-driven like game, but we're doing just like a traditional like game loop or whatever. So we have, you know, basically a big array of all of the keys or buttons or whatever, whether they're up or down. And we just read that array in every frame for our inputs. And because of that, the key input was disconnected from the sound playing. It wasn't in the same event handler anymore, and it wouldn't work, like we could never play sound. So we had to have like this big crazy workaround to attach a mouse handler, like an extra one, and then if something, or if a mouse event happened, it would play a silent 0 second long sound in the mouse event handler just to enable sounds, and then it would deregister the mouse handler and it would disappear. So it was like this weird workaround. So then you could just play sounds whenever you wanted to after that.
And that's another one of those things where it's an investment. It's like built into the engine and you never have to do it again. You just, he wrote it one time.
Mm-hmm.
And got it working, and then every single game does that, but you don't even have to think about it because it just does it.
The other thing is like opening like windows, like for like pop-up windows. Like we have, you know, we click on the name of the musician for our games. We want to link back to their website, or link, we click on 2Scoop and it goes to our websites. And the same thing with the mouse handling. Like you can't just open up pop-up windows whenever you want. You have to have it attached to a mouse handler or a click handler like directly in there. Or else the pop-up blocker will block your pop-up and you can't do it. So you had to do another similar workaround to the audio thing for opening windows.
You can think of like good reasons why this stuff was implemented. Obviously, you don't want JavaScript to just load on a page and then start popping up windows or start playing sounds without anybody asking for it. So there's reasons for that, but it's like web reasons. And so you have to deal with all that stuff when you're making a game that you normally wouldn't have to deal with in a different game engine. So
when you build for a different platforms that take that part out, or do you leave it in?
Well,
or
it's actually, we have different implementations for different platforms. Like for Ejecta, we have a special code that we have when we load the mouse module or whatever, we can say, oh, if we're in Ejecta, we're going to call Ejecta's magical open new window and web browser function. Otherwise, we're going to do the normal HTML thing and window.open.
So it's just like conditional. We won't run the wrong stuff in the wrong place if it doesn't need to. So, and then you have to get that. So, well, we kind of talked about this before. Like the getting people to play browser games is a little tricky. We're still trying to figure that out because it would be awesome if everybody, you know, if apps were all web based and we didn't have all these different app stores and everything was like unified as one big internet, and everybody could just go to apps, and they understood that, but people don't understand that yet. So it's basically fragmented. We have different app stores, and new app stores are coming every day, like the Firefox one, and all these different marketplaces and everything. And so we've just kind of discovered that you got to try to be where the people are if you want anybody to play your game. So that's why we cater to all these different stores and stuff. And then displaying ads is another challenge that comes along with that, because we want to do our first couple of games ad-supported, because you can't really charge for something when you're just starting out and somebody even knows who you are. So what are some of the things that they deal with the ads?
Well, the hard part about ads is, like, if you're on a web page and you want to display an ads, like, you typically go to something like Google AdWords or something like that, and they like want to review your web page and check that there's actual text on the web page to give you relevant ads. And so if it's a game, there's no text on the page. And then they say, no, you can't have ads on your page.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, there's a bunch of ad providers out there, but we haven't found one that'll let us just do, you know, like our web page is basically blank except for a giant canvas with a game on it. So we haven't found someone on the web who will let us do ads on there. But on the app stores, it's actually a lot easier because everyone, there's already, you know, all sorts of ads on mobile. There's AdMob, and there's all these, iAd is built into iOS, and you can basically just call out to those and turn them on. So those are a lot actually easier than the web.
Yeah, so it's not possible to have, I would guess the possible way to send that information to AdWords so that it's possible to actually see the actual text on the screen.
Yeah,
could that be possible?
Yeah, I tried to reach out to them. It's kind of weird. I don't know, for some reason, like, I got blocked or something because I tried signing up for AdWords. I had them review the pages, and I had them, like, review the whole website that all the games are on. And they sent back a thing saying that it needed more text on the page so that they could, like, find relevant ads. And so I changed some stuff. I added, like, a meta description and some other stuff on the game so there's kind of, there's text there, but it's not, like, shown to everybody. And they never got back to me. So I tried emailing them again and just never got back to me. So I don't know what happened there. So we're still trying to pursue it, but we've been kind of busy with other stuff, so we haven't really, like, spent a ton of time on it. And then there was another like ad provider where you email them, you like sign up and you email them and talk to them, and then they like review your pages and stuff, and then they said that we weren't getting enough traffic, so they wouldn't put ads on our stuff. So it's just, you know, just a bunch of hoops.
One of our ideas for the like the text on the page is like we have our game like details page. It's got all the screenshots and all the write ups and everything about the game on. And we could make it so the game is embedded on that page in like a hidden div, and then when you click the play button, it opens up in a big div. So it's still on the same page with all of the words, it's just floating above it or something, and that might let us skate through, but it's a little bit of a gray area. We haven't actually tried that, we might be banned now.
So we talked about like some challenges, but some of the awesome things that we've encountered with having a web app is having games that are basically web apps is that with Chrome Web Store, there's really good exposure for your app. So if you put something out there, I mean, we were getting like a few thousand people playing it pretty quickly in a couple of weeks. And then our first game, Kickback, got featured on the homepage. They have like curated lists. And if you get put on one of the curated lists, somebody notices it and puts it on there, you're going to get, like, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 more people playing your game in a couple weeks. And the curated lists, like, if you get on the new and noteworthy section, it seems like they leave you on there for, like, 2 weeks. So it's really good exposure if you have a game that you can put on the Chrome Web Store. Just take that time to do it because it'll have a lot more people playing your game that way. And we've had both of our games featured on the new and noteworthy section, which is pretty. So somebody found them somehow.
I think one of the good things about the Chrome Web Store is that it's like the only app store for Chromebooks. And people
tend to
buy, you know, they're cheap $200 laptops that people will buy for kids or people who aren't real technical and they want to play games and oftentimes a lot of simple games. And they'll go to the app store for their Chromebook and you're there, you know, and you can be on that page and with an appropriate game you can get a lot of users, you know.
So it's like there's like a $5 charge to make sure that you're not a spammer to join the Chrome Web Store, and then after that you just upload as much stuff as you want. So it's not really that bad. And then yeah, like he was saying with the Chromebooks, we've had people saying like, this is really cool that I don't have to be online to play this game, because there are a lot of games where they like call out to an external web page or something. But with our stuff all being app cached, it's like they download the game and they open it one time and it's not downloading anything ever again. It's just done. So it's like it's a web app, but it's a full app that's just running locally after that.
How does that work with ads if they're not online?
We don't have ads on any of these. We only have ads on the iOS. So if we were doing ads, they would have to be. It would have to call it to the web server, probably.
Yeah, and it would be hopefully easy enough to add like an error handler.
Yeah.
So if they're offline, you just wouldn't show it.
Like if you're in airplane mode on an iPad or iPhone or something, that the ads just won't show up. Yeah. So if you ever want to just remove the ads on the game, just turn it on airplane mode. They'll usually just disappear.
Last time I paid $2 to get rid of the ads.
I'm not saying that. There are a lot of good developers that we were actually thinking about doing those pay a dollar to get rid of the ad things. But, yeah, so it's pretty cool. And then, you know, you could easily send a link to somebody for the web store and it's still just a web page. It's just that extra manifest file.
The best thing about, like, having just a web page game is like it's a web page. It has a URL. You can give that URL to anyone, and they can load the game. You know, there's no entry. They don't have to install anything. They don't have to accept any permissions. They don't have to worry about it breaking their computer. And they can play it on their phone. You can send it to them right then. You can text it to someone, and they can open it. And it's just boom, you're there. No install, and it's just such a low barrier entry. The only barrier is people's minds and wanting to go to the app store. But it's super easy just to be able to, like, demo it to someone. You know, there's no, like, no corporation you have to apply to get access to put it on the web and get your game updated. You know, like, every time you want to patch your iOS game, you have to do a bunch of patches and then submit it to them and wait a week or two and then they'll do it. Google's a lot better, but they can still sometimes take a while, or they can reject you if they wanted to. So it's really great also just for development. Send people a secret link and say, hey, test this game out, and they can just play it right there, and you can update it live, and
it takes, like,
instantaneously, you know?
With iOS, it's like 7 days if you're lucky to get the app approved, and then after that, just updating it, just, like, putting out a simple update will take, like, 5 days, usually. And so it's kind of, if there's a bug, and people are playing your game, and something's broken, it's kind of, that's a long time to wait while you're, like, nervous about fixing that. So...
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a pain. So other awesome things, like we've mentioned before, JavaScript is fast to develop in, it's easy, and it's pretty much, you know, everybody who does web development stuff has done some JavaScript. And so it allows, like, the patching over different device differences, because JavaScript has been cross-platform forever. And it's mostly stuff that we mentioned before, like that. iOS builds are easy after we did the first one, and then we've got it done. So,
and if you're, I don't know, it's also just really fascinating. If you have a day job as a web developer, like a lot of people might, you can learn all this extra neat stuff that you could do in your web browser, and it adds value to your job too. You can add little touches to your web pages with some of these things, or there's just a lot of cool, like, learning stuff. So you can already use your same web dev skills and just learn a handful of new APIs and have games going and not a lot of investment. You don't have to learn a whole new language or a whole new engine thing. And there's a lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of fun, and it's fast to develop it, and you can change your code and reload. You know, it's like the web developers, like, cycle of development. You know, you can just edit your JavaScript, reload. Edit your JavaScript, reload. You can tweak it in the debugger, in the web browser, and just see it act differently, you know? It's so fast. So you don't have to wait for a compile step, you know? It's amazing.
You guys use, in your own engine, correct? But my question is that I remember in the past, like, HTML5, you start seeing more engines and whatnot, there were a lot of 3D. Are you guys messing with any recommendation for any good 3D engines or something?
We haven't really done anything with 3D.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of our stuff, like, just like the style of our games, we've just been doing 2D stuff. It's just kind of out of preference. I think we never, like,
it's just a lot more time investment to do 3D stuff.
Yeah.
You got all the modeling and all that.
I don't do like 3D art, so we just kind of gravitated towards doing two-dimensional stuff, but might play around with it someday, maybe for like a game jam or something, just get a little exposure to it.
Is there hardware acceleration in any of the browsers themselves?
Yeah. Yeah, all the WebGL stuff is hardware accelerated.
And all of them?
And all the, like, modern browsers.
Many of them.
Yeah.
I know...
IE11, at least.
No, something, there was some sort of Apple announcement recently and some next revision of something Apple. They're turning on some sort of WebGL something. Like it's hit, huh?
Yeah, in iOS 8.
Is that like for phone gap stuff then?
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically like all the web view stuff is crippled, and they're kind of just turning that on. So
it is pretty bleeding edge though. So if they haven't turned it on yet, it's going to be turned on soon, and everything like within a year will have it if it doesn't have it already. And it's only just getting better. Everything's still pretty bleeding edge. Like I'm surprised at a lot of the stuff that we're bumping into, you know, like stuff, like, I'm surprised at the things we can do with the browser now. It's amazing. Like, I can control the hardware on a phone from a web page now, which is awesome. But a lot of it is also so new that it hasn't been, like, ratified as an official standard yet, or it's broken in this one browser, and you have to, like, route around that for now. But it's...
Yeah, there's crazy stuff that you could do with the
like,
browser.
I've actually
like...
bumped into browser... bug reports, you know, like on these open source, you know, Firefox bug reports and Chrome bug reports because it crashes on this one device. Or this one version of Chrome, like, you know, can't play web audio API sounds for some reason. It's like
this stuff kind of amazes me. I don't know if anybody else gets excited about this kind of stuff, but this is Google presentation. It's just a Google Doc thing. I could take a file from my computer and just put that into there and it just becomes part of that. But I could also open this up, copy this, select all, copy, put that, and also just paste it, and it shows up as an image in the web app. It's just stuff blows me away. The stuff that you could do with browsers now is just weird. It's like that doesn't seem like a website anymore. It's like the blend between apps and websites is just crazy now.
Maybe a silly question, but what has a lot of technology to develop like that? Before we had this static web pages, and now we have this.
What was the question?
What was the transition from static web pages into completely interactive?
When was it, or what?
Like how did it? I don't know. It's kind of an abstract question.
Like what
a lot of the technology.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been slowly. Like some of it was there for a long time, but like no one knew about it. You know, like there's in the last several years there's been a big JavaScript renaissance, people discovering this thing that's been in there since the late 90s, you know. But then a lot of these devices and mobile phones are, I think, driving some of it because they have all this hardware built in. And like I said, originally the iPhone was supposed to be web apps, you know, like
yeah.
They weren't going to allow native apps, like
yeah.
Other than Apple's own stuff on there. So they built all of these APIs into the browser and people played around with them for a while, and then they came out with the App Store and everyone forgot about it. But
people are asking for an app store.
Yeah, and it's just, people are, I don't know.
People don't understand it yet, really.
The web people haven't gone away, they've just been quiet, and now they're, you know, getting louder, and stuff's getting released, and it's just been building up over the past years in the background, I guess.
There's a ton of cool stuff in browsers that are going on now that's you know, not even really, like, out yet, other than, like, the latest version of Chrome.
One thing that's coming out that's going to be amazing is the WebRTC data channel, where you can have browsers communicate to each other without a server, and you can send data between browsers peer-to-peer. And that's going to be amazing when that comes out. I don't know, in a year or two or something.
It's so, 6 years for IE.
So, I mean, there's, like, it's a hell of a platform, you know? Like, I haven't found, like, almost anything I wanted to do that I couldn't do in the browser.
So how do you, what's your strategy for protecting your assets?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Graphics, audio,
I mean,
bundling it up.
All of our stuff's on GitHub
yeah.
public. We just don't advertise it and hope no one finds it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like someone wants to play your game, it's going to download all the assets, but they're pretty much straight PNGs or bundles.
Yeah.
Or is there some kind of bundling scheme out there?
You mean like a DRM thing, like encrypted and
something? I don't know.
Well, if we released it as just like an iOS app or just like a Android app, then all that stuff wouldn't be public. But we do have like all our stuff out there.
That's not entirely true.
Well, it's harder than a web page.
barely harder than one page.
So, I mean, this is our code for our new game. It's all just right here on GitHub public. And all the images are right here, and I mean, anybody that wants to, we've just been leaving all of our stuff open, and you know, we have our logo on there, so you know, it's our game. But anybody can look at the code, and hopefully it'll help them learn how to use the Splat engine. So we haven't really had any problems with it yet. That's not to say that we won't have to think about that eventually.
I'm of the mind that all of that's a big waste of time anyway, so I don't even want to look. It always ends up getting defeated anyway, and I would just be wasting my time trying to implement something like that.
Just to have some
other teenager go and reverse engineer it and figure it out anyway. Mm-hmm. So why bother?
They could play our game for free, so the only thing that would be, I mean, what if they like released it themselves or something? I don't know, but. About it too much.
So, it seems like you're creating, most of these games you're creating are pretty much be able to show off the engine itself and everything and show the abilities of it, and then you guys can release it so people can try to use it, I guess.
They're
kind of pretty much the reason behind it. I mean,
behind what?
That you're actually, because you said everything's like open and stuff like that, so people can actually go away and mess with it, so that kind of, I guess that's kind of what you wanted to do. I mean, or does it just end up happening that way that people can actually go in and actually mess with it?
We haven't. I don't think we've talked a whole lot about like whether the games themselves are open source. We don't have a license on them on the internet, that's for sure. So you can look at the code, but it doesn't mean you're licensed to use it or do anything with it. The engine is open source, and the games. I mean, we're just making them make games because we like making games.
I didn't know if you had like in the future, like, oh hey, we made this game.
We do have like a demo game for the engine, like a Palm game for it, so you can download that and read through the code and throw a comment in that code. So since we're in like a JavaScript renaissance and there's all this neat stuff being developed, there's probably hundreds and hundreds of JavaScript engines out there for making video games. You know, like we're doing the Splat engine because I want to learn a lot about it. Like it helps me in my day job to know more web technologies, and it's just I want to know all this stuff works, so I'm greedy and I want to reinvent the wheel myself, but I'm consciously doing that. I'm not, I'm purposefully ignoring all these hundreds of other things that are out there. I know there's Phaser, Mozilla has one called CreateJS, and
there's Impact,
and there's a bunch of them out there. So if you don't want to reinvent one, you don't have to.
Game Salad, MelonJS,
there's a lot. If you search, you'll find all sorts of. There are many people have physics engines in JavaScript. People have particle engines and just all sorts of things. So if you want to use other people's code to be super effective and get a lot done, there's plenty of that out there. You know? What's on that? I think there's one more. Sorry. Nope. Questions?
How'd you guys come up with your name, by the way?
What name? Two Scoop Games? Ice cream is awesome.
I just like ice cream.
We like ice cream.
Yeah, it was one of those. There's this classic Eric thing where he comes up with a really good idea, and then he does this. I don't know if he does it on purpose, but I have to. Then he starts to hate it, and then I have to convince him again to like his own idea. And so Two Scoop Games was he was just throwing stuff out on Google Chat one night, and I'm like, oh, it's so good, and he's like, nah, we can't use that. And then we were thinking about this other stuff, and. I just kept coming back to that. So, and then he eventually said, yeah, that we could use that. So, and now it doesn't make sense to use anything else. So. And then we always get people telling us about good ice cream places.
Win win.
Yeah.
How many games have you guys made total?
Six-ish, kind of. We have like three that are kind of done. But technically, there's six. So, like, we've got Scurry. Apartment 213 was a jam game for Global Game Jam. Kickbot is our other, like, full game that's out. And that's we did for the Flappy Jam. Chromecast Blackjack. I don't want to talk about it.
There's
Mr. Fluffykin's Great Story Adventure was for Ludum Dare, which these two awesome guys, Rex and Anthony, helped make, which was really fun. And we're still going to finish that eventually and put it out on tablets and stuff, and it'll be sweet. And then Suresh is our sixth one that we're just close to finishing. So
Chromecast Blackjack
is, God.
I have to talk about it because it's both really horrible and really awesome at the same
time.
Like, it's not a canvas game, so we're not drawing, we're not blitting sprites.
Can I show them the card shuffling thing? Is there some place I can go to show that?
I don't think so.
Dang it.
But it is, those are actual, HTML elements, circles and squares.
Yeah,
it's
all CSS.
It's all CSS, like a regular web page. Those are divs.
Yeah.
And we use CSS 3. 3D transformations to flip the cards over and CSS 3 animations to slide them around on the screen.
That
and
part
works.
Was all really fun. That part was awesome.
It was amazing stuff to learn, and it's actually really cool. And the CSS animations and stuff are all hardware accelerated in most browsers also. So they look
really
smooth. And
all this text is like fonts and stuff. I did it all like web.
Yeah, a special icon font for the card suits or whatever.
Yeah.
Really cool to develop that part. We did it in Chrome, and it runs fine and looks great. And the Chromecast, the $30 TV stick you can stick in there, that's really a Linux box that runs, it really runs a Chrome web browser on your TV, and you connect to it over Wi-Fi. They have a JavaScript API where you can talk to the Chromecast. And we did research. We spent a weekend, like a Saturday, figuring out if you can send messages back and forth to it. Like, you can tell it to play a URL, which is what most apps do. They'll say, hey, go play this, video URL off the internet or whatever. But you can say, open a web page, and once the web page is open there, you have an API that you can run on the Chromecast itself in JavaScript and talk to whatever device is connected to the Chromecast, whichever phone or whatever is connected to it. And you can send I don't know if there are strings or JSON objects back and forth, wirelessly, without having to do any weird networking setup. And it works. It just works, and it's magical.
Those will be your local Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah. The one thing that it's not super fast. The first obvious thing we wanted to do was to take our game Kickbot and add a remote controller, basically, so you can left and right on the big screen. Boom, 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 boom. But we measured the latency, and it was 4 frames, round trip response time in order to send a command back and forth. So you can't do an action video game using as a remote controller. You can do slower stuff, and we decided what's a really slow, obvious game that we could do. We chose Blackjack. That's really easy to do.
You can easily do like a trivia game or any kind of card game.
Yeah, or maybe even a puzzle game. I don't know.
Something if you came up with a clever way to mask that time that it takes to transmit with a cool animation or something that's happening so they're distracted, you could do a lot of things. You just have to, think.
So the one tricky part, the thing that made us hate our lives when we were working on this was developing an actual native Android app.
Or
iOS. Mobile development. Since the Chromecast is an actual web browser and it just runs JavaScript, that's awesome, but when you have to talk to it, you have to use a native app, the actual Chromecast button on your Netflix app, or that's a native app. You have to write Android Java code, or you have to write iOS whatever code. And that sucks. Coming from a web background, that stuff is horrible. And we got a basic thing working, and we were able to send messages, and we got distracted by a game jam, and we haven't been back to it. So we know that it works, we just haven't finished it because mobile development.
That sucks because we need to get it done because there's nobody else that's made a Blackjack game for the Chromecast yet. And so if we finished it, we would be the only one there. So
I was going to say that's only a few apps for the Chromecast, so if you guys got it, definitely awesome.
Yeah. That's the thing, if you search for Chrome apps that are specifically made for the Chromecast, there's one page.
Yeah.
And if you made a game, everybody that gets a Chromecast is going to try a game, they want to see what their new toy can do. If they spent $30 on it, they want to try more than Netflix, they're going to go and see what is out there, and oh, there's a blackjack game. Oh, cool, I could play it with four people. That's cool. And, you know, the idea was we would have, like, somebody could be on a laptop, somebody could be on an iPhone, somebody could be on a tablet, somebody could be on an Android phone, and all four of them are playing on this card table, and they're, like putting the cards up onto the table and stuff, and it's still a cool idea.
That is one of the cool things, is you can have multiple connections to the same Chromecast from multiple devices, so you can
all
have multiplayer
devices,
games, which is really freaking cool.
So.
What's your
question?
I don't know. The communication to the Chromecast is wrapped up in an API, and I don't even know how it works. So it's a black box to me, and I don't know if you could talk to it that way.
Cordova, you should be able to write plugins for it that are native code, so you can write a shim that talks to that module, however you need to speak to that, and expose the API back into the browser.
That would be kind of sweet.
Yeah, that would be much nicer. Especially if I could do all the UI and stuff with like an HTML page, that would be really cool. Yeah.
That would be something we would be interested in doing, but not knowing how to do it.
And then the other thing that's frustrating is just the Android Studio and like Android development stuff. It feels like every time we open it, there's like all these updates and just get bombarded with crap and you can't figure out. I just want to open up my text editor and write code. Like, I don't have to deal with all this giant ecosystem of stuff. I'm not used to it from being a web developer. So. It's a little weird. Yeah. So, 6 games. I think the question was how many games have we made?
Which one's your favorite?
My favorite is Suresh right now. I think that's the most fun that we've made. Also, Apartment 213 is probably my second favorite. That one's really weird. It's kind of like an adventure game, sort of, like a point and click adventure game in a way. And it's also kind of weird because every time that you finish a level, you play as the character that was harassing you from the level before, so you like switch places with the antagonist, and so it's kind of weird. I'd love to make like a really big cool version of that someday that wasn't a 48-hour game jam game. And I did all the artwork with triangles, which was kind of fun, so it's just really weird. And I love watching people play it. There have been a couple people who have done YouTube videos where they played it. And they don't know, you know, what. Like, there's no dialogue in the game or anything, and the characters are just animals. So people have a lot of funny things to say about them, and so they do like YouTube people will do like voices for the characters and stuff, and it's just really fun to watch people play it. So that, but Suresh is like the most fun, like gameplay wise, that I like. So. Kickbot is really frustrating. For me, it's a cool game, but it's not like my style of game. It's like a Flappy Bird kind of thing. So.
Do you have any idea how YouTubers found your games together?
Well, originally,
we helped them to find us.
Yeah, the first guy that found Apartment 213, he just found it on the Global Game Jam site.
A lot of it is people
so,
will find you. They'll go through all the Game Jam games.
I would say like. That was so crazy when I saw that video. And now there's been like 17 videos made of games. And it's just really cool to see them. Like, there was just one last night. It was scary.
Whenever someone makes a game or a video about one of our games, whenever we do something new, we go back to that person and say, hey, we got something new.
You have to like keep relationships up with YouTubers and bloggers and stuff. Like, keep like talking to them. And I'm trying to find some Twitch people because Twitch is really popular too. We haven't had anybody play anything. But what about you? What's your favorite of our games? I just answered for us.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I thought you were asking the crowd.
No, you.
I think Kickbot.
Oh, wow.
Kickbot. I can kind of zone out and just, like, jump.
I've been thinking about doing some more Google Analytics stuff, like tying in Google Analytics into the game itself. Because you could do events in Google Analytics, and you could see like you had all kinds of cool ideas. Like somebody gets a score, the game is over. It takes that score and it sends it up to Google Analytics, and then it's like
you
get
a graph
to see
of everyone's scores.
You
get a graph of how long everyone's playing the game. You could get a graph of how many times someone has died before they quit and leave.
You could come up with some kind of events to see if the people are actually figuring it out, quick enough or like seeing if people are struggling in a certain spot or something. Like that stuff's really interesting to me. Like whenever I hand somebody the game, a game that we're working on, I don't tell them how to play it. And we don't put instructions in our games like at the beginning. Because we watched that Ego Raptor video. And so like it's like Mega Man. So you just learn how to play it by playing it. And so you just when somebody plays it, if they're not getting it like four times in a row, then we're doing something wrong. If they're getting it like the second time, then we're okay. So, and people feel better when they figured it out themselves. So,
one other awesome thing we didn't mention about using like JavaScript and web technologies is the whole Node.js ecosystem. I'm using something called Browserify to build the engine, which it basically gives you a module system in JavaScript. Instead of having one giant JavaScript file, you can have separate little modules, and they're all namespaced, and you can suck in all these little modules from each other, and it makes your, you can be able to break up the system into small little chunks. But there's also NPM, so you can use any of the modules on the npmjs.org or whatever, and when there's like a complicated bit of algorithm code, someone's probably already implemented it and put it on NPM for you. For example, I wanted a seedable random number generator, because in JavaScript you can only get random numbers, you can't ever seed it. And I wanted repeatable random numbers. So I found a module where someone had implemented the Mersenne Twister algorithm, which is like, if you read the Wikipedia page on that, is a whole bunch of bit shifting and weird crazy stuff that I didn't want to do. And I happened to find a NPM module that has Mersenne Twister, just implemented right there, and it's a function call, and I can just require that and call it, and it's got a compatible license with my engine, and I just, boom, I pull that down, and I don't have to write that, and it just fits in, and it's just like a seamless part of the whole engine. It's amazing. Like, there's this huge ecosystem, and there's a lot of smart people out there writing modules that you don't have to.
So, do we have any questions? Thanks for having us.